Welcome to Business Beat. Here each week, KBIA takes a look at the business and economic issues facing Mid-Missouri. I'm Christopher Husted. Governor Jay Nixon stopped by Columbia twice this week. He has spent the summer drawing attention to the many problems he and other critics see with House Bill 253. That is the income tax cut bill he vetoed in June. There is a chance state Republicans could make a run for an override of that veto in September. The bill cuts income tax and corporate taxes, and under certain circumstances, allows business taxes to be passed through to individual income taxes. Conservative estimates peg a potential state revenue loss at $692 million if the bill were to become law. Other estimates put it upwards of $800 million. While visiting the MU campus Wednesday, Nixon directly addressed the GOP lawmakers who have pointed to Kansas as a model for cutting taxes and reinvigorating business and the economy.
Over the past several months, we've watched our neighbors to the West struggle with the aftermath of their own reckless experiment with tax policy. The result after they did that has been a $777 million tax increase and a $35 million cut to higher education and a downgrade from an independent rating agency. Those of us that say we should look west to follow their policy are quite simply wrong. House Bill 253 would take us down this same dangerous path. The fact is that members of the General Assembly can support House Bill 253 or they can support higher education, but they cannot do both. This is that splitter point. You don't get both sides of this one.
Republican House Speaker Tim Jones has stated to several media outlets that it will be difficult to get the votes to override the veto. Next week, the Republican caucus will meet and discuss the issue. And speaking of taxes, a study by the Pew Charitable Trust shows that Missouri is in the top 10 states when it comes to using cost-benefit analysis of taxpayer money. Jennifer Davidson has details.
Cost-benefit programs analyze the cost of public programs and the benefits they provide taxpayers. In short, it's the study of how much bang taxpayers are getting for their buck. And it can be a very effective tool when drafting new laws or policy. The state's use of cost-benefit analysis report released this week finds that Missouri is one of 10 states leading the way in using cost-benefit studies to shape its policymaking. According to the report, Missouri held 4 cost-benefit studies in 2011, whereas some states like Arizona and Delaware didn't conduct any. Most states are using cost-benefit data to better understand economic development and health and social services, but some states also use it to better administer education and housing. Researchers interviewed policymakers and agency officials, and they also reviewed state reports. I'm Jennifer Davidson.
When genetically modified wheat was found growing in Oregon earlier this year, it didn't take long for accusations to start flying. No one knew how the unapproved wheat ended up in the ground. A flurry of finger-pointing cast potential blame on a federal seed vault in Colorado, which housed the same strain of wheat. The facility's been cleared of wrongdoing since then, but the investigation brings up the question of how secure these seed vaults actually are. Harvest Public Media's Luke Runyon took a tour of the Colorado vault and filed this report.
I'm standing here in front of the National Center for Genetic Resources Preservation, which is just a fancy way of saying seed vault. It's a pretty nondescript building. It's beige with a red roof, 3 stories tall. But it's the nation's largest collection of seeds, genetic material for livestock and microbes. So let's go inside and see what's going on. Inside the facility, good luck getting past the lobby without a key card and passcode. Locked doors are around every corner. Luckily, I have a tour guide.
My name's Dave Dierig. I'm the research leader here at NCGRP. That's the National Center for Genetic Resources Preservation in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Dierig is in charge of the seed vault and one of the 6 people inside who has access to the main vaults where seeds and animal embryos are kept.
So, yeah, these are the doors to the vault.
We're about to head into the facility's black box storage room. Think of it like a series of safety deposit boxes in a bank. Other seed vaults throughout the world send their backup collections here. So do some private companies like DuPont and Monsanto. The room is kept at the same temperature as your home freezer. Fur-lined parkas hang on a rack just outside large gray metal doors.
Is it chilly inside?
Yeah, it is. You may want to put on a jacket, but it actually feels kind of good now that it's summertime.
to the right of the doors, a TV screen shows a live stream of the seed vault. It serves as another reminder of the building's security. In this place, you're always on camera.
Deep breath. We won't stay in here too long, but...
Inside, ceiling-high shelves hold seemingly endless rows of white pouches. In this room, there are 600,000 seed packets, which puts the total number of seeds in the billions. Some are here purely for storage, but researchers can also request seeds for studies.
And then they're all barcoded, so we know exactly where everything is.
That's another security measure. Looking at a seed pouch, there's nothing that tells you what kind of seeds you're holding, just a barcode. You need access to a secure database to find out what's inside. Downstairs, behind another series of heavy metal doors and under the watchful eye of security cameras, are long rows of stainless steel capsules. They're filled with liquid nitrogen to store seeds, livestock semen, and fish eggs.
We have anything from fish to cattle to sheep. We even do some cattle blood. But pretty much that's what we do so that we can put it in our big database and it's accessible and we know where it is.
Lab technician Angela Sosa is transferring Chinook salmon eggs from one container to another, placing them back into the liquid nitrogen. She's another of the handful of people with access to this room. The facility has been compared to Fort Knox in its level of security. But earlier this summer, that formidable reputation was thrown into question. For 7 years, this same vault kept about 1,500 pounds of Monsanto's genetically modified wheat seeds, including the same strain found growing in small patches in Oregon.
It would really be a rare case where we would keep another company's seed. There'd have to be some kind of extenuating circumstances for them to say, we need you to keep this seed.
It's a rare occasion, but as in the Monsanto case, it does happen. Research leader Dave Dierig says he can't comment on the specifics of the Oregon case, as Department of Agriculture investigators are still trying to pin down the seed source. A department spokesman says all of Monsanto's wheat seeds held at the vault were incinerated 2 years ago at the request of the company. With the investigation turning in other directions, this beige building in Colorado can return to business as usual, securely storing the world's seeds. Luke Runyon, Harvest Public Media.
That's it for Business Beat this week. I'm Christopher Husted. Thanks for listening.